Multicon Podcast, Episode 45.119.
Wahahito Band Wonder, Atmosphere Displays, 6,000 miles an hour, on the day they shot a monkey into space.
Okay. Welcome to the Balticon Podcast. This is the place for the best interviews, panel discussions, and author readings from Balticon, the Maryland Regional Sci-Fi Fantasy Convention. Balticon is held each Memorial Day weekend. For details, see our website, www.balticonpodcast.org. Welcome to the Balticon Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Fisher, and I'm glad to be back here with you once again for the best in science fiction convention audio. Next week, we'll be recovering from Thanksgiving travels, and so I think I'll allow myself a week of rest. No podcast next week. We'll be tidying up and working on organizing the Compton Crook Award audio project. I'm hoping to tap one of my friends to do the coordination so we can continue bringing you fresh readings from the historical back catalog of Crook Award winners. This week's episode was recorded in January 2011 at Farpoint Convention, which also takes place in Baltimore. Many thanks to Stephen H. Wilson for his continued hard work making Farpoint happen and keeping the new media track up to snuff. Farpoint is a media convention. In contrast, Balticon is a literary convention. At Farpoint, they have movie and TV people as guests. At Balticon, we have authors. Back in January, I had the honor and privilege to interview two of the main stars who were guests of honor at Farpoint, Bonita Frederici and Tomo Pennicott. Bonita plays General Beckman on the NBC TV series Chuck. Tomo played Hilo on the new Battlestar Galactica series, as well as Paul Ballard on Dollhouse. Both are incredibly well-spoken, working actors, and had to be some of the nicest people I've had the pleasure to interview. I'm sure you'll enjoy my talk with them. A word about the audio quality. There was a cell phone in range of the microphone, off and on. It's worst right at the beginning of Tomo's interview. It's completely gone by the 2-minute mark, so please hang with us. Worst case, just forward fast and you can get past it in no time at all. Before we dive in, I want to let you know that Martha and I will be guests at Farpoint 2012, which happens this February 18th through the 20th at Crown Plaza Hotel in North Baltimore. Guests include Kate Vernon, Michael Hogan, and Kristen Bauer. Kate and Michael played Ellen and Saul Tai on the new Battlestar Galactica series. Kristen plays Pam on True Blood. For more information, check out www.farpointcon.com. That's FARPOINTCON.com. On the way out, we dedicate a song to all the actors we've had the honor to meet. The song is Famous by Ben Warren and comes to us courtesy of Music Alley by Mevio. You can find out more about Ben Warren at bwarren.typepad.com. That's bwarren.typepad.com. And now, on with the show.
Get a bumper and just say hi. I record for the Balticon Podcast, so if you could just say hi, this is...
Okay, Benita?
Yeah.
For the Balticon Podcast. You'd think I was an actor. Okay, yes. Oh, now?
Okay.
Yeah. Hi, this is Benita Frederici for the Balticon Podcast.
Excellent. Your character is how many star general?
That's a point of bitterness with me. Actually, I am a one star general, a brigadier. General Adam Baldwin. I've learned it. I would like to be a two-star general, a major general, Adam Baldwin. You've taught me. Yes.
But she's in charge of the NSA.
She is, and apparently sometimes the CIA, too.
Sometimes, yes. This is groundbreaking. I mean, I don't know that there's ever been an NSA director that was a female.
Well, I'm trying to think. No, because I did do a little research. Actually, honestly, my prototype, I went and watched Judi Dench as M. I love her, and it's like a no-brainer, Casino Royale. It's like, oh. There is, I don't know what her ranking was, but Andavir Smith on West Wing. She was military. Does anyone, I don't know exactly what her rank was, but she was a military lady, yeah.
But this, in real life, I mean, you're in, you know.
Yes, Benita Friedrich.
You're in Baltimore, the home of the NSA.
Yes, and I am Benita Friedrichi, and I actually am the director of the NSA. So.
Oh, okay.
Yes. It's all real life. I'm really a general. No, yes. And you're saying in real life there are female generals. There is not a female director of the NSA.
Right.
Though.
So this is kind of groundbreaking in that respect.
Yes.
And you know, do you want to? Obviously, you want to see her get a promotion to.
I've been trying for years, yes.
To major general.
Yeah, every time I get promoted in the script, it disappears. I'm not sure who's got it out for me. And someone called me you're talking to a two-star general, but that line disappeared. It's like...
Did they go through and teach you how to put the uniform on properly?
It's four buttons I thought I could handle.
The
fruit salad on
the fruit salad.
I'm afraid it's not real. It's one big fake brick. But what's really interesting is a lot of the guys on the crew, not a lot, but several of the guys on the crew were in Vietnam and stuff like that, and they will come up to me and say, I've got that medal, that medal, that medal, that medal, and put me to shame. And they also did. My first salute was not one of my better salutes, so they taught me how not to bend my hand.
That's cool. Now, mostly you're on the TV screen, you pop up in, usually it's in Castle, but you've popped up on just about every screen that they can put you on.
I have. I popped up in Chuck's bedroom at his feet. That was an uncomfortable scene for General Beckman because she didn't really want to be talking to him about his relationship in his bedroom. I popped up. They contacted me at night once in my kitchen, and an unknown man bumbled around behind me and got pie out of my refrigerator. That was an interesting one. They woke me up in my bed with my clap-on, clap-off light and my little, if you had a little hair hat to keep my little General Beckman. That, there was a lot of discussion about that. Beckman hair, perfect. That's when I first found out that Morgan was in Castle and I was not happy to be awakened. And yes, I popped up on people's laptops. I may pop up on your TV set, to beware. I'm getting, well, it's part of my acting job. I've been researching how I can pop up on screens anyway. I don't know. And I'm acting the entire time you don't see me. I actually never leave that office. I'm a method actor.
Do they actually have an office for you, or is it just a green screen? Do they like?
I would like if they green screened my office. I will say this. I have had an office with four walls, too. Chuck did come to Washington, D.C. when I made him a spy. And he came to my office. And this is very important to me because the set designer and a couple other people blindfolded me. Mike Bonney, and took me over there and said, you're not going to believe this. And they took the blindfold off, and I had four walls.
Oh.
So I was very excited. It is not green screen. It is actually just a bookshelf. And then I have a big desk and a chair. And it moves around. It can be anywhere you want it to be.
Yeah, I heard you on an earlier interview said that sometimes you wind up in the craft service.
That was a particularly sad little moment because it was the craft service area on stage four. I guess they just totally ran out of room on that episode. So there was my desk was sort of smashed back there, and then there were like 30 crew people in the actual corner of the room, if you can imagine, that kind of stacked up on top of each other, trying desperately to like move their arms and things like that. Yeah, it was like 6 o'clock in the morning too.
Wow.
Well, you can shoot my stuff pretty quickly if you have to.
Now, I pulled the the mature women in my tribe, and they have all agreed that Jean Larroquette is absolutely to die for.
The mature women. Yes. Is that what we're called now? Yes, I like that.
What was it like to make out with Jean Larroquette?
I was sitting in a room full of guys, just for the record.
I'm back in, so you're safe.
Oh, thank you. I feel better now. It was dreamy. Honestly, I was having a little... I just was in extremely high heels. He's 6'5", and I'm 5'3". And I was supposed to be... You don't see, but I was in very tight spy garb because it was supposed to be in the 80s. And they gave me, like, kind of 6-inch heels. And I was walking on a wet and sort of uneven street. And the first couple of times I was trying to walk up to him and put a gun to his head, I kind of felt... kind of would wobble back down a little bit the hill. So finally a prop guy came over. He goes, "Are you trying to hold your gun, like, really cool? Because it doesn't look right." And I was like, "No, I'm just trying to get up toward his head. I can't reach it, and I'm falling over." We had a discussion about that. But I think Jean Larroquette is a very handsome man, and I think he's an extremely good actor, and I was delighted to work with him. I won't get into the personal specifics of it all.
So no jealousy at home from your husband?
Oh, John, of course not. Good Lord in heaven, he owes me. He was on True Blood. He was naked at night. Smearing chocolate cake in places I'm not going to describe. Amongst many other things, actually, yes, on that show.
Chuck has, one of the things that I love about it is every season it evolves. It gets deeper, the story changes. It's not a typical TV show where they try to keep everything the same. You know, season after season, they're just saying the same thing, telling the same story.
That's CSI, I know. What?
Yeah.
How's that done well? Yeah, no, I'm kidding. Yes.
But do you think that you're going to run into problems just keeping that going where, you know...
When Chuck and Sarah are, like, 80 years old? Or...
Well, right, exactly. You know, it's you know...
You're a really good spy,
next
honey.
Next season, it's going to be about the baby and about Chuck and Sarah getting married, and then they're going to have their baby and, you know... And you know, what happens when the kids are in, you know, high school? You know, what do you ever see them running out of?
Apparently not. You just described a whole lot of their stuff there. I have no idea. The way these guys, I've said this to Chris Fedak, their brains are just wild. I mean, I love, did you guys see at Comic-Con that little bit they did after he did the Chuck saying, "Guys, I know Kung Fu," and then they had Chris Fedak beating his head in this Darth Vader thing after it got picked up, saying, "Why did you have me say I know Kung Fu? Why? Now I have to write for that." So I would imagine they would not run out of some sort of ideas for this, because they've always blended it between the people living their lives and what happens in the spy world, and I think they would figure out a way to shake both of those up and find another mixture, I'm hoping. And then you can always have, like, Beckman, like, just carry her desk around with her. Whenever you have a problem, just make a whole season of Beckman Live where she just yells at people around the world.
I like the fact that there's no foreshadowing usually about when she's going to show up on set, as opposed to on it. It's like at the beginning of an episode, you'll be on the screen. There's no mention that you're coming out to LA, and then at the end of the episode, you show up in person or in the middle.
They're trying to find ways, which I really appreciate, trying to find ways, they talk about this all the time, of getting me out of that if they can. And I think, I mean, that delighted me, the episode where it's like, I just decided I'm going to come here and give you your orders in person. Yes. I mean, well, she's got her own agenda.
She's got to have her own plane, right? I mean... She's a general.
I invite Yvonne. That was kind of interesting little moment where one episode I invited her on a ride on my plane.
Cool. So, what are your hopes for your character on the show?
My hopes and my dreams. You know, really, I would like to get to use a bullwhip.
You used a rocket launcher.
I did.
And a gun.
Wow.
I did.
Yeah.
But can't you see her with a bullwhip? I mean, come on.
Awesome. That would be awesome.
Every good woman should have one.
I know, right?
And I think that's a perfect place to end the interview. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I love that.
So when you say literary, what do you mean?
Books.
Just science fiction books.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
So Ben Bova is going to be our guest of honor this year.
Cool.
And so I'm just going to be all over the place with questions because this is kind of a bonus episode for our listeners.
Sure, yeah.
Could you start by giving me just a bumper? Just hello, this is Tom of Pennicott, and you're listening to Balcon Podcast.
So what's the name again? Balcon?
I'm not even wearing the Balticon shirt. Balticon.
That's Balticon.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, right. This is Tom of Pennicott, and you're listening to the Balticon Podcast.
Awesome. So the first time I saw you that I really remembered you was that initial scene in Battlestar Galactica where you give up your seat to Gaius Baltar. Mm-hmm. And I remember listening to Ron Moore talk about that on his podcast where he said that he was done with you at that point. And then when they did the premiere, everybody that came out was saying, well, what happens to you?
Yeah, there was a big fan response, I guess.
Just immediately from the first showing.
Yeah.
You think you're, the luckiest actor?
Definitely. It's really flattering to know that, the audience out there responded in that way that they wanted, I can only take so much of the credit. I mean, it was written really quite well. It was a great scene. It was a awesome opportunity. I think, I think part of it was the connection I had with Grace Park instantly. We connected right away, just as friends, just as young actors. We made a connection and we bonded right away. And I think that showed in the performance and the connection that we had as characters in the show. It's really important. Oftentimes, you just don't have that chemistry. From what I've observed, being a fan of this art form also, is it's... Regardless of how good actors are, sometimes they just don't have chemistry. You see it often, and you see oftentimes, and then you'll see actors really trying to make that chemistry. They're playing lovers or people who are very close, and it just doesn't come across well. Grace and I had a connection right away, and we clicked. We were like brother and sister. We were like old friends instantly, and it's awesome. I mean, she's still a dear friend of mine, and I think that's part of the reason that fans responded to Hilo too, and. But yeah, great, greatest opportunity in the world. And like I said, I was just answering this question earlier on. I had no idea that I was going to be coming back. I was done with it and I was okay with that. I had a great experience shooting it. We shot it over months. I worked with incredible actors and I had, I get to play the hero role in some ways, and I was done with it. I moved on. I get the call six, 7 months later. Maybe even longer. Maybe it was 8 months. I don't know. But that they were going to go to first season. They had an opportunity for storyline on the planet. The C storyline, sort of, to visit Hilo running around on the planet trying to survive.
And this was your own storyline.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been pretty cool.
That was incredible. I remember when Ron called, I had a particularly bad week. My first pilot season in LA, and had a bunch of bad auditions in a row, and I found out that the last series I was on, the one that I went to right after I shot the miniseries of Battlestar, Cold Squad, a Canadian cop television series, was canceled. So I was having a really bad day, I think, kind of questioning whether I wanted to do this anymore, which you do sometimes, especially after you've had some bad auditions. And then I got the call from Ron Moore. I got the call from my manager, and he said, Ron Moore wants to talk to you. And I'm like, well, give him my number. And he called me up and he said, yeah, I've got this idea for the storyline. And I'm like, Ron, where do I sign? Let's do this. I'm excited.
Have you previously been a fan of Battlestar Galactica?
I was very, very young, I remember it though. I didn't have cable when I was a kid, so I remember watching it at a friend's houses, but it was significant at the time. I remember how big it was at the time, it was it was a big deal. I remember having, the action figures and stuff, and playing Battlestar Galactica, and, you know, no disrespect to the original series, but, you know, I think, I'd like to think when people think about the show now, I mean, it was one season. We were significant. You know, we shot that show for almost 6 years, if you think about it. 4.5 seasons, but with the miniseries and the year in between and the writer's strike and everything, we were together 6 years doing that show. I'd like to think that when people think about Battlestar Galactica, they think about our version.
That, there was a lot of new media that was that surrounded the show. Ron did the director's cut podcast that was meant to be played while you were watching the episode. You guys did a bunch of episodes during the writer's strike, and I understand that, there was some argument surrounding that about like the studio didn't want to pay you for the work on the. Webisodes.
Mm-hmm. I'm not really privy to a lot of that because I never did any of the webisodes, but I know that some of my cast members did, and I can't remember the situation with that, so I can't really speak on it.
Okay, but do you participate in any new media like Twitter or Facebook or anything?
To be honest with you, I really should career wise. I'm sure that it would be a smart move to get on Twitter. I find it hard to juggle everything, you know? I constantly get really frustrated with Facebook even. I hate that I check it as much as I do. And to be honest with you, I haven't used it much in the last month, but I still check it because I have a lot of, you know, friends who email me there. I'm not good at promoting myself a lot. I try to be present as much as I can in life and, you know, really focus on the things that I can. I find that there's very little time in every day. I need to work out. I need to meditate. I need to be present with my friends and family and not be incessantly checking my phone or Twittering when I'm with them, because it makes them feel less important and less loved, because that's how I feel when somebody's doing that when I'm around. Those are things I'm trying to focus on more in life, but I'm constantly being told I need to Twitter. I don't know. I might get in trouble with some of the stuff I might say. I can be really honest at times, and I might put my my foot in my mouth, but yeah, I'll consider the whole Twitter thing. But you know, other than that, I'm not very good at self-promotion. I just find it hard to juggle email and text and all of that in life. There's too much of it, to be honest with you, in my opinion.
Yeah, one of my friends calls the current generation the generation that never looks up.
Listen, I mean, it's unfortunate. I get it. You know, I'm guilty of it myself when I'm on the computer. I'll be texting. Sometimes I've found myself, you know, comfortably watching. I'm a big, huge fight fan. Fight's on in the background. I'm on my computer. I've got my phone beside me, and, you know, texts are coming in, or I'm having a, you know, a WhatsApp conversation at the same time. It's, you know, we're like this ADD generation, completely unfocused sometimes, but I really think it's important, and I try and make a point of not doing that when I'm with loved ones or people I care about, because it doesn't do anything for relationships. It's making us more distant, and I mean, the irony of it is we're using technology to get closer to each other, and it's actually making us more distant and more lonely, if you really think about it.
I think it's a double-edged sword that it is. It cuts both ways, and sometimes both ways at the same time.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people here that I only see a couple of times a year, and we keep in touch all year round.
Which is great.
Absolutely. This continuing conversation.
Yeah.
You see someone, and you just throw your arm around them and go head off.
You've
to the
kept
bar,
up.
And
yeah.
it's like you never left.
Yeah, not to be negative about it. Like you said, it is a double-edged sword. You know, it's great to keep in contact with old friends, people I grew up with, family and stuff. I can use Facebook for that and stuff. But it's just, it's really just hard finding a fine line, though, with it.
Yeah. It's managing that line, I think. That's
yeah, it is.
Thing.
The balance of it is really difficult, I find.
Now, you're a big science fiction fan.
Yep.
Do you read science fiction as well?
Yeah.
What some of your favorite science fiction books?
Probably Philip K. Dick's Do Androids Dream of Electric? She was one of my favorites at a young age, of course, because of the film I saw first. And then once I got it, it took me, you know, years later. I was young. I was a little boy when I saw, you know, Blade Runner.
Yeah.
But when I finally got to read the book, I was really excited about that. He's got a very different style. William Gibson is definitely my favorite sci-fi writer, though. I love his stuff. One of his last books, Spook Country, is a large part of it set in Vancouver, where he's lived for years. He gets a lot of his inspiration. He writes from there. I see him all the time. I turn into a fangirl. The two times I've met him, I've stumbled over my words and had absolutely nothing to say. And I've read his books, and I could sit there and just, you know, quote things. And it's amazing watching a writer develop as a writer, his style, the way he writes, and just to see him grow as an artist, you know. But anytime I've ever seen him, I'd be like, Mr. Gibson, I'm a big fan of your books. It's really nice to meet you. And then walked away going, oh, you idiot. Idiot. Yeah. Anyway, I love William Gibson. Yeah.
What we were having this discussion last night about, do androids dream of electric sheep?
Yep.
And the book is so hugely different from the movie that was based on it, mm-hmm. Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. And I think you really get to see there the difference in the art of writing and the art of filmmaking. And,
yeah.
And both being, you know, part of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
If there was one specific, you know, book that was made into a movie that you would like to be in, what would it be?
Well, geez. I read, if I would have been appropriate for any of the roles, but I recently saw Never Let Me Go. Did anyone see that? By Ishiguro. It's an incredible book. Really, really sad, but they made it into a film recently, and it was really, really, and I thought it was impressive what they did. It's really very difficult for any excellent novel to be made into a quality film. There's always going to be people critiquing it, saying you missed this, you missed that. Well, listen, it's impossible to get everything in 2 hours. Mm-hmm. I'm always impressed when somebody does a good job. You know, hey, if I had the opportunity to be in any of Harrison Ford's roles, when, you know, if there was a possibility and there was a remake or something, I would jump at the chance. You know, I don't think Blade Runner should ever be remade, but I mean, incredible film. Yeah. Even though it was so different from the book, still such a huge fan of it.
Yeah, I think both book and the movie were excellent.
Excellent,
they were,
yeah,
completely different.
Yeah, although I think, you know, the final cut really was the best.
Yeah.
Because that's what he wanted to do with it originally, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Could I ask a favor?
Sure.
Just wanna be famous, I
You've been listening to the Balticon Podcast, where your source for the best interviews, author readings, and panel discussions. We bring you information from the minds that make science fiction happen. Authors, stars, techies, and scientists. If you want more information on anything you've heard in this podcast, you can find it in the show notes on our website, www.balticonpodcast.org. You can also leave us feedback for the show. Check out the contacts page on the site for more details. Balticon is a fan-based convention run by the dedicated volunteers from BSFIS, the Baltimore Science Fiction Society. Find out more about BSFIS at www.bsfs.org. The Balticon Podcast is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution 3.0 United States license. Share it and let people know where you got it. But if you try to make money from it, you may get a visit from some unsavory characters.
Don't make me destroy you.
The Balticon Podcast is produced by Dancing Cat Studios. That's us, Paul Fisher and Martha Holloway. We couldn't function without our dedicated volunteers. The Balticon 42 recording staff, Thomas Command Line Gideon, Bruce Lerner, and Sci-Fi Geek Steve. And the Balticon 42 new media track coordinators, Nobilis, Harknell, and Onizumi. Our theme music is Space Monkey by Jim Hodgson, and comes to us from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. You can find everything Jim Hodgson at jimhodgson.com. That's J-I-M-H-O-D-G-S-O-N.com. Thank you for listening.